wants to.
We're gonna make it a memorable experience.
Okay, welcome everyone. We'll get the, this Friday, February 22nd, 2008, meeting of the Joint Bridge Collapse Investigative Committee underway. We're here gathered today to hear from the Legislative Auditor's Office to hear an overview of their report on state highways and bridges. With that, we'll invite the Legislative Auditor and Ms. Janod, Assistant Auditor, to the table. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Special Joint Committee. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the Legislative Auditor, and with me at the table is Deb Janod, who was the manager of this evaluation. I'd also like to recognize in the audience Carrie Meyerhoff. I believe she's hiding, but she also did work. And I think you're having trouble hearing me.
Yeah, can you?
Yeah.
Are the mics turned on?
We'll check. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. Can you hear me now?
We don't want to.
Maybe if.
Just to let folks know, Senator Murphy is en route. And he'll be here, I think, in about a half hour or so. Until then, I'll work with the cheerleader here to chair this committee. Oh, sounds like we've got sound. Okay, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Do you need me to reintroduce myself, Representative Horton? Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to just remind everybody how we got here today. Shortly after the I-35W bridge collapsed on August the 1st last year, legislative leaders established this special committee to specifically look at possible causes of the bridge collapse. But the Legislative Audit Commission met and asked the Office of the Legislative Auditor to do a broad evaluation of state highways and bridges. Essentially, the Legislative Audit Commission asked us to update a report that we had issued in 1997, which had forecast future problems the state might have in preserving and maintaining its existing highways and bridges. And so we've done that, and we said at the beginning, as we scoped out that evaluation, that we would not in any way try to duplicate the work of this committee or of the National Transportation Safety Board. And so we do not specifically address in any way why the 35W bridge collapsed. We have some information in our work papers related to the bridge, but none of that material is drawn forth in terms of findings or conclusions. But I think we do bring to you some useful information. We always intended to try and provide legislators with a broad context of state bridge inspection and maintenance procedures. And so that's what we have to present to you today. And, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, then, I'd like to ask Ms. Janod to make a brief presentation of our findings and recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Welcome, Ms. Janod.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, I'm Deb Janod, and I'm with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And I also would like to thank Carrie Meyerhoff, back in the back of the room, for all of her assistance. We would not have made it here today without all of the help that she provided when she came onto this project in November. So with that, let me get started. I'm going to focus my comments today on those portions of the report that deal more specifically with bridges and structures on the highway system. I'll cover some of the information from the report on the conditions of bridges, inspection practices, and also on investments in bridge maintenance and preservation. I'll be moving back and forth a little bit in terms of information that applies more broadly to state and local structures and bridge inspection practices. Most of the data, however, that I have to present is limited to the state trunk highway system. And I'll try to make it clear when I'm moving back and forth between those realms. Let me begin with bridge condition. MnDOT, as nationally, has many, many measures that can be used to talk about bridge condition. We focused our work, as MnDOT does, on the structural condition rating. This is an overall measure of a bridge's or culvert's condition. For bridges, it takes into account the deck condition, the superstructure, and the substructure condition. And most of these data are weighted by deck area. That is, a larger bridge counts more in these data than a smaller one does. The department has performance targets that are related to bridge condition, and they've had these targets for a number of years. For principal bridges on principal arterials, those are interstates, expressways, and other highways, the department wants to have 55% or more of deck area in good condition. For non-principal roadways, bridges on non-principal roadways, that target is 50% or more. As you can see in the graph here up on the screen, these trends have been inching upward over the last 5 years. The principal arterials, bridges on principal arterials met the performance target in 2006. For non-principal arterials, the condition of bridges in good condition exceeded target in all 5 years. But looking only at the percentage of deck area in good condition doesn't always tell the whole story. For example, new bridges that are built with expansion projects come into the system in pristine condition. So to the extent that there's construction of new bridges, these numbers are going to go up because of that. It's also very important then to look at the percentage of deck area that is in poor condition. And MnDOT, again, gathers that data as well. And they have targets established, again, for principal arterials and in non-principal roads. So you can see here that the red bars show the condition of bridges on principal arterials. And in all 4 years, 5 years, those numbers are higher than the target. So we want to be below 2%, but the trend is moving in the right direction. And they've been chipping away generally through the bridge replacement program and bringing those numbers down. Conditions for non-principal roads are below the target. They want less than 8% in poor condition, and indeed met that target in all 5 years. And that, other than the 2003 data, I'm not quite sure what the anomaly is there. It's probably one really big bridge that changed. Those trends are moving in the right direction as well. In addition to this data, there's another indicator of how well the department's been able to address the issue of bridges in poor condition, and that is what's happened to the number of bridges found to be structurally deficient. And that number has declined. In 2002, Minnesota had 121 trunk highway bridges that were structurally deficient, and that number has declined to 94. Let me talk a little bit more about bridge and culvert inspection. In Minnesota, as in other states, much of the inspection program is driven by federal standards. In Minnesota, actual authority for inspecting bridges and culverts and other structures is decentralized. MnDOT district offices and city and counties all have inspectors who do this work. As shown on the table here, inspection team leaders, those are lead inspectors. They're also certified in Minnesota assistant inspectors, but the team leaders are the ones who must be on site, and they're the ones who sign off on the inspection reports. So MnDOT's district offices have 73 certified team leaders. They are responsible for the inspection of about 4,500 trunk highway structures, and that includes both bridges and culverts. The central office has 6 certified inspectors. They do specialized inspections. They provide assistance to state and county governments that are need assistance. And the MnDOT central office, the bridge office, also oversees Minnesota's overall inspection program. County and city inspectors have authority over about 14,500 local structures. Not all of these inspectors, or very few of them actually, do the work in a full-time role. Most inspectors in the state also are part of bridge maintenance crews or part of district engineering. For example, in MnDOT, they're part of the district engineering staff that deals with bridges. Speaking now specifically to MnDOT districts, Those districts that we visited said they did have sufficient resources to conduct routine bridge inspections. Primarily, they emphasized because they make those resources a priority and make them available to get that work done. Let me talk a little bit about fracture critical bridge inspection because I think that's of interest to this committee in particular. As you know, fracture critical bridges are those that are built in their design without redundancies so that if a load-bearing component fails, the entire structure is at risk of collapse. National standards require some specific attention and inspection practices related to fracture critical bridges. As you can see here, Minnesota has 69 fracture critical trunk highway bridges and 142 in the local systems. Minnesota, we keep the specialized inspection for fracture critical bridges centralized. There are inspectors in the bridge office, the Metro District, and the Rochester District that do specialized inspections statewide. The requirement is that fracture critical components of the bridges receive a hands-on inspection every 2 years. Hands-on means within arm's length. And those inspections can be supplemented with non-destructive inspection techniques such as ultrasound. We talked to the bridge office about resources available to do fracture critical inspections. And they are requesting additional resources to implement new federal standards that require that inspection be done every 2 years. Those went into place in 2005. Prior to that, the bridge office practice and Metro District and Rochester District, the practice was to do a full in-depth inspection of fracture critical bridges, all components of those bridges, every 4 to 5 years. With this new standard, MnDOT would prefer to keep a more thorough and complete inspection process in place. To do that, though, every 2 years instead of every 4, so they would like additional resources, and we think that makes sense. We also took a look at how often inspections are done, and I'm shifting gears again back to routine inspections. Federal law requires routine inspections at intervals not to exceed 24 months. Minnesota rule puts a presumptive inspection interval of annual. But the rule also says that in certain circumstances and with the permission of the bridge office, Minnesota bridges can be inspected on a 2-year basis rather than annually. And in fact, 87% of structures are assigned a 24-month interval, and the remaining 13% are assigned annual inspection intervals. All fracture critical bridges must have a routine inspection annually, and bridges that are considered to be in poor condition also must be inspected annually. We did take a look at the data to make sure that actual inspection dates were aligning with these assigned intervals and with federal requirements, and found that in fact most were inspected within that 24-month time frame. 85% of those that we looked at in our data set were precisely within the 24-month. 96 to 97% were inspected within 27 months, and that's in keeping with the grace period that the Federal Highway Administration allows. Regarding inspection procedures, the protocols for conducting bridge inspections are highly structured. They're set out in federal standards, professional standards, and the department's inspection manual itself. The procedures break the bridges down into their respective components, and there are criteria for what you're supposed to look for those components, and also criteria for interpreting what inspectors see in terms of the condition of those components. For the most part, routine inspection of Minnesota structures is done with a visual examination. We'd also gotten a lot of questions about what happens if a team leader or inspector out in the field encounters an immediate safety concern, who's involved in the decision-making, and what happens then. Minnesota's policy is that inspectors are directed to take immediate action if they find a safety issue in the field. That would be anything that's a critical deficiency that might affect the structural integrity of the bridge, that is, puts the bridge at risk of collapse or partial collapse, or another significant deficiency that would raise a risk to the public, such as a chunk of concrete that if it were to fall down would hit a car or a person. In those cases, team leaders are directed to take immediate action there to either get the repair made or to close the bridge or do what they need to do to ensure the safety of the public. When we talk to inspectors about how they use that authority, were they free to use that authority if it was needed, they assured us quite adamantly that, yes, they feel that they have full authority to make those decisions when they need to be made, and, in fact, they've done it. I also, a critical deficiency found during an inspection means a deficiency that, if not immediately addressed or soon addressed, would lead to the collapse or partial collapse of the bridge. This is a serious deficiency that can be found during an inspection. These are rarely found in Minnesota. In 2007, the department, all the inspections, state and local, inspections in 2007, there were 17 identified. And those, if you're interested in looking at an example, are listed in Appendix E of the report. And finally, we took a look at the Federal Highway Administration reviews of Minnesota's bridge inspection program. The Highway Administration does a review annually, or almost annually, in Minnesota, and covers all aspects of the program to determine Minnesota's compliance with federal standards. I reviewed those reports back through about 2003. In all cases, the Highway Administration found Minnesota to be in substantial compliance with federal standards. It pointed out as of special note Minnesota's quality assurance program and Minnesota's training and certification of bridge inspectors. They did include some repeat recommendations. Those included a recommendation that Minnesota reduce the number of bridge inspections that are completed in the dead of winter, and also that Minnesota ensure follow-up on critical recommendations. The first issue has to deal almost exclusively with local governments that schedule some inspection in winter. The issue there is that their snow cover inspectors can't see all parts of the bridge that they need to inspect. If a winter inspection does take place, then the inspecting authority is supposed to schedule a follow-up later in the spring or summer to cover any of those parts of the bridge that hadn't been seen in the winter. The critical recommendation issue has to do with the critical deficiencies that I described before, or other serious deficiencies where there should be management follow-up to ensure that those deficiencies have been addressed. And the Highway Administration identified some issues with the follow-up, closing the loop to make sure that those got done and that the work has been documented. We did a bit of work on highway maintenance. Again, we were interested in what happens after an inspection is complete. One issue raised in the report is that we think that MnDOT can improve its processes for documenting that decision-making process that happens after an inspection is done. Inspection reports themselves do not serve as a good record of maintenance. The inspection reports, the primary purpose is to document what is the condition of the bridge. And I think members here, and we also looked at inspection reports and found things that were repeated from year to year, wondering, were these things addressed, were they not? And in talking with inspectors, actually having them walk through those items, oftentimes, a finding from an earlier year is actually left as a notation in the inspection report because once something has been found, inspectors later need to continue to revisit that part of the bridge, whether maintenance work was done or deferred. And so the documentation there, it works for the inspectors. It's not a very good vehicle for communicating the maintenance history of the bridge, particularly to an outside audience like us. So we make a recommendation, and I'll probably raise this again later, that the department do more to establish standard procedures for documenting those decision-making processes, what was what work was ordered, what work was deferred. And then that, again, can be used for follow-up to make sure the work actually gets done. We talked to districts as well about anecdotally, because we didn't have good records, and we also had limited time in terms of looking, really examining or analyzing maintenance data. But we did interview in depth at several MnDOT districts about how they're doing in terms of getting to maintenance work. The districts reported to us that they are getting to high maintenance priority items, and by high maintenance they mean those things related to safety. They're falling behind on lower priority and routine maintenance. The districts attributed that to changes in their bridge crew staffing. For example, in the Metro District, staff told us that prior to 2001, they operated 6 bridge crews with about 32 staff. They also supplemented those crews in the season with 2 to 3 seasonal hires. Currently, they operate 5 crews. They still have a complement of 32, but there are 7 vacancies. So they're, in essence, operating with the crew strength of, or a staffing strength of 4 full-time crews. They no longer hire seasonal staff. According to the districts, there are 2 implications of those changes. One is a reduction in the volume of work that can be completed by those crews. The second, and this is an important issue I think as well, is the bridge crews really are the eyes and ears, the ongoing inspection function that goes on a day-to-day basis. These crews are out there, they'll identify drainage issues or other problems while they're out doing their business. So that's an ongoing inspection function, and to the extent that there are fewer crews out there in the field, there's less of that going on. The bridge crews aren't the only providing the only maintenance on these bridges. This chart shows these bars on the bottom. They're kind of small, I hope you can see. Show the ongoing contract amount of contract spending on bridge preservation that would include things like painting, joint repair, bearing repair. And this is in addition to the kind of work that district bridge crews do. As you can see, it hovers between $12 and $14 million a year over quite a long stretch, and boosted in 2007 to about $26 million. Again, these reflect the contract amounts let for bridge preservation. These additional bars show investments in bridge replacement and expansion. And by expansion, those would be new bridges built with new roads and other projects like that. And as you can see, beginning in 2002, there's a significant increase in investment in bridge replacement. And again, that's what you would see reflected in those bridge condition numbers that we talked about earlier. This investment reflects on those trends. To put this in context, I thought it would be interesting to see trunk highway spending in total. With the bars on the left here show preservation and expansion contracts let for pavements, trunk highway pavements. And then bridges, the same chart that I showed you before, are on the right, but in perspective in terms of the spending. I think this reflects the level of interest that everyone has shown in pavement condition and roads as well, to see this in the context of bridges. We make several recommendations related to bridges in the report. First, we think that MnDOT should provide the funds necessary to meet the frequency requirements for fracture-critical bridges. We think the department should document post-inspection bridge maintenance decisions better than it does now, and those procedures should be standardized throughout the agency. They should ensure timely resolution of recommendations from the Federal Highway Administration, and also should assess its needs and provide additional bridge maintenance staffing resources. And with that, we'll just wrap up, and Mr. Nobles has additional comments.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add a few comments. I don't want it to go unsaid, because I think it's very important that we acknowledge that the officials and staff at MnDOT cooperated fully with this evaluation. I know things have been said in recent days from a variety of sources that MnDOT is very difficult to deal with, that some people have a hard time getting information from the department. That was not our experience. Now, it is true that we have some fairly strong authority to extract information, but we really didn't feel the need to use that at any point because people at MnDOT were very eager, very willing to come forth. They met with us on our terms. We interviewed people, usually one-on-one, sometimes in groups when we thought that was useful and necessary. I, and Ms. Janot as well, but I specifically, particularly in some of the recorded interviews, asked MnDOT officials and staff, particularly lower-level staff, if they had been directed or guided or restricted in any way in what they could say to us. And to a person, they said no. We also offered anyone in the organization an opportunity to speak to us in confidence. And we have in our statute special authority to offer that confidentiality. And no one did that at MnDOT. They spoke to us openly and on the record. And I think that ought to be acknowledged. I also want to say that in the course of doing this evaluation, as is true in every audit or evaluation that we do, we accumulated a great deal of information. We call them work papers. That information will be available to this committee, to your staff. Much of it is covered in our report, but some of it is not. Specifically, some material that will be of interest to you related to the 35W bridge. We did interview some people who specifically were involved in inspections and maintenance of the bridge, and as I think you may know, we also, in our interview with the chief bridge engineer, Dan Dorgan, interviewed him specifically on a number of controversial issues related to the 35W bridge. That interview was under oath, and as some of you may know, excerpts from that interview are in our report as Appendix D. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles and Ms. Janot. Questions from the committee? Inquiring minds.
I've got a couple. You want me to start with number two or number one?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you for bringing up the Appendix D. I did appreciate reading that, and I thought that was a good affirmation of the process over there and of Mr. Dorgan. And I thank you for putting it in. My two questions are on your list of recommendations. One of them is your comment, the management policies to guide the use of debt financing and federal advanced construction for trunk highway. Could you elaborate on that?
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Janot.
Representative Peterson, Minnesota was on a pay-as-you-go basis for many years, and in 2000 and 2003 initiated some major bonding initiatives to bring additional resources to the trunk highway program. And there were some lessons learned at MnDOT from that process. And when we went to them as part of our evaluations, we always do when getting to know policies and practices, we asked what their written policies were about use of those debt financing techniques so that we could make some assessment about how the actual administration of those bond initiatives went compared to their policies, and found that while they had informal policies, they said that were guiding that decision making, they did not have formal policies. What we were looking for were statements of how much debt is it wise or prudent for us as a state to enter into at any given time? What are the best uses, or when should debt financing be used? So those parameters or those frameworks around it were what we were looking for. They don't have those formal policies in place, and we think that they need them.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add to that.
Mr. Nobles.
What we were looking for is what I think you would find, what I know you will find, if you go to the Department of Finance's website and you click on debt management. There is a formal statement of state policy on how we will use debt and how much we will use, and there are some performance indicators. That's what we're looking for, some guidance, some formal policy direction. And I don't think the department disagrees. I think, as Ms. Janot indicated, they have that developed, but simply have not brought it forth. We think it ought to be brought forth to you and be discussed After all, you're a very important part of the process of deciding how to fund transportation, and so you ought to be a part of that discussion. It's not to lock you in, but it's to help guide you. So that was why we raised that. We think this is a very important thing.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Peterson.
I could follow up on that. I read in your report on page 83 about the fact that there was a major ramp up. I believe it was in 03-04. Would you venture to suggest that because of that major ramp up that they were ill prepared to continue on a program and they didn't have policies because that was given to them to perform on and not necessarily something that they were prepared to handle at that time? Would you weigh in on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, yes, that to some extent that is true. That initiative came up fairly quickly, and the projects that were chosen for the initiative were projects that had been on the books for quite a long time at MnDOT, but they were accelerated. They had been planned for years in the future and were brought forward. The entire initiative was about $800 million, half of it from bond revenues, half from use of Federal Advanced Construction Authority. And the department learned that a couple of things from that experience. One, that there are cash management issues in terms of the cash balance of the Trunk Highway Fund that need to be managed very carefully. And again, that's part of the policy making that we suggest needs to be on the book to address those issues because there's so many implications for the cash flow in the Trunk Highway Fund. Another lesson learned from that initiative was the importance of properly scoping and estimating the cost of projects up front. One of the issues that the department faced following that initiative as they implemented it was that the original cost estimates for the projects included in the bond accelerated program, the projects included in that initiative, the bonding didn't cover the full cost. As the several years progressed and the contracts were let, the full cost of the project came in about $185 million more than the amount that was bonded for. That also includes some of the Trunk Highway 52 money as well, which was an earlier initiative. Those funds that were needed to use to meet commitments of the transportation initiative projects had to come from district construction budgets. So at the same time that the department knew that it needed to be investing more in preservation, its pavement numbers were going down, the pavement condition was going down, the department knew it needed to direct money to preservation, but those funds were tied up in major construction projects. So as I said, it's part of the issue was not so much the bonding itself, but being prepared for it and having it fully financed in the initiative.
Representative Peterson.
Yeah, continue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. If I follow the same thought process, the same hitch of the wagon, I go back to the comments you make about highway projects being planned, designed, and approved so far in advance that if and when they are funded, they, A, create a financial dilemma, and, B, the problem I have with that is communities like mine are asked to sign off on those design criteria, and then the project isn't really going to be able to come on stream for a decade, and yet even the criteria that went into that design might not be valid anymore, and they create anticipation in the community that is simply cannot be achieved. And I have felt the angst of that in Bloomington. And so when I read that that part on page 80, again, I read that I read it twice. Can you react to my comments on that issue that ties in with the question of debt financing and covering accelerated budgets that throw everything into a tizzy?
Ms. Junot.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, I think the department's in a tough place on some of these issues. There's immense pressure from the public, from political leaders, from local governments, business community to get projects into those long-term plans with basically an attitude of let's get our foot in the door. And the department will acknowledge that it has allowed too many projects to get worked into the plan. The number of projects simply could never be afforded within a realistic assessment of available funding in the future. So one of the recommendations we make is for them to take a tougher stance in terms of bringing forward only projects that they think they have a realistic chance of funding in the long term, which is going to be pretty tough to swallow for all of us in the room. I mean, there are so many needs out there, but we think in terms not just for public relations, but for more efficient use of MnDOT's resources in terms of really focusing on those projects, to develop those projects that they can move forward with. So they're not working on little bits of development on projects that they're really not going to get to either. So there's work for everybody to do here in terms of, you know, the legislature's assistance in helping MnDOT stay focused on its top priorities and those projects that need to get done. And MnDOT needs to stand firm about bringing projects into the plan that they can realistically deliver and fit with their priorities.
It occurs that there's another option available, too, and that's making more resources available to the agency and looking to the agency's leadership to embrace that possibility. One final follow-up from Representative
Peterson. Final comment,
Mr. Chairman.
It all comes back to money. And these two issues have been flagged are not criticisms of MnDOT per se, because I know their staffs go out there and they say, we can design this bridge or we can design this interchange and we can get it going. And the city engineers love them to come out and help. But the fact that they can't perform is not for lack of talent, it is for lack of money. And the money issue and that responsibility comes back to this body. And so we are partnered, Mr. Chairman, with some deficiencies that might be flagged here. We are part of that.
Mm-hmm.
We need to step up.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Okay. Well, I do have Representative Leader and Representative Earhart, but I'll defer to my chair. All right. Representative Leader, and we'll go to Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Nobles, or Ms. Gennady. And again, I'm not criticizing the department, but I'm a little concerned. I was aware that there was an impetus to do a lot of bridge regulation, but it basically in the 50 or the, not 50s, this last 10 years. And much of the chart would indicate that. I think most of the bridge repair went like on the interstate system. They had to beef up a lot of bridges on the interstate, and I think that's good. I'm not criticizing that. But my concern is the fact that that would relate that they're doing a lot of bridges. But the concern that I feel is we've not been able to address what we call maybe bridges over that aren't over dry land, that have not been able to be programmed or constructed because of the cost. And I think it's easy to lose it in the numbers. A bridge is a bridge. And if we say we're doing all those bridges and doing all that, if that was strictly on numbers, you can certainly see. And it was a real impetus by the department in the last decade to do interstate because they had to beef up their 9-ton design. They changed their design. My concern is now, again, as Representative Peterson pointed out, I'm not critical of the department in that sense. I'm critical, again, of the legislature. We've not provided the funds to enable them to program or build these big structures. And I was wondering if that isn't truly reflected in numbers when we look at what you have there. If you would build one or two of these big structures this next year, your graph is really going to pop down. You're not going to show you're doing that work. Would that be a true statement?
Ms. Gennady.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, there are some major bridges that are very expensive to build. Is that the issue that you're talking about? Trying to get those into the plan.
Right.
The department several years ago created what they call the Statewide Bridge Preservation Fund, seeded with about $40 million a year of federal money, to try to address the issue of funding those bridges that would break the bank for the districts that own those bridges. And so they have a process in place to select these large, most of them are river crossings right now, where the half of the funding for that bridge will come from this central fund, the other half would come from the district budget. And they did that to try to move forward the replacement of those big bridges. Lafayette is in that pool, Cayuga Bridge in St. Paul, Hastings, there's one in Winona, Trunk Highway 23 over the Mississippi, that's in St. Cloud, and the Dresbach Bridge are included in that program as well. There's a list in a footnote on
it. It's on page 81, right?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just sort of again, and I go back partly to Representative Peterson's comment that it's about the money. You know, again, I would only say that that's exactly what we heard from MnDOT. We didn't hear anything different from this side of the table than we're hearing from this side. In fact, when we went into our closing conference, we had a pretty tough report for the department to swallow. And we had an exit, as we always do, with senior management, which included the commissioner and all of the division directors and all the senior management at MnDOT. And I think the message was from them was, make sure you get the message out. Our situation is dire. It's grim. It's tight. That's their message. I think the only debate is where to get the money, not that they don't need more money. So, and that's the debate you had yesterday, and I hope we don't have it today. But just to make clear, I don't think there is a, I know there is no disagreement on either side of this table about the need, and that the need has to be filled with more money.
Representative Leader.
Just a follow up. Thank you. I appreciate that. But I guess I'm trying to express that my concern was it was definitely came out yesterday in the debate that the bridge situation is good. It's not bad. But the point I'm making, if we would take a bridge as a bridge and put these big bridges in here, you aren't going to show that we're keeping up the chart. And I'm not criticizing the department. I'm criticizing ourselves again because we don't have the money. And that's why I think maybe that's misleading to a lot of people that we heard it yesterday. There's no problem with the bridges. I think there's a major problem because we can't construct the big ones. We can't afford it right now under present structure.
Well, Mr. Chairman and
Mr.
Representative Leader, yes, we have to be very careful with statistics. And that's kind of the business we're in, and we do try to be careful. And we certainly wouldn't want people to use this data and these statistics in a way that is not the clear message. There are bridges that need to be replaced. This presents an overall trend. So I think you make a good point.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chenod, if I remember correctly, the 2003 offering was $400 million of bonds and leveraged with $400 million of federal advanced construction monies. How was the debt service scheduled for the $400 million of bonds? There was some talk about efficiencies. We're going to pay for those. And I suspect that meant that we're going to lay off people or something to get the necessary debt service money. That's the two-part question. And is the advanced construction money was a charge against future federal funds then? Is that the way that works?
Ms. Jannot.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, you're correct on both counts. The debt service for the 2003 bonding portion of the initiative did come from reductions in the operating expenses of the department. They made $39 million, I believe, maybe $36 million in reductions in their operating expenditures to cover the debt service. Regarding the federal advanced construction, yes, advanced construction doesn't say that we get more federal money. It basically is about the timing of using federal dollars. And so we were able to access federal dollars in a way that allowed the department to let multi-year contracts without obligating all of that money at the same time.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Committee members, and thank you, Ms. Jannot, for being here today, and you too, Mr. Nobles. And we appreciate the report. It's very timely and much needed. I've got a couple questions. First, I want to kind of follow along what Representative Peterson was his line of questioning earlier. and just ask the simple question, because I read through this and I couldn't find my answer in your report. But you know, we were talking about the planning and delivery of projects earlier, and that there's all these pressures mounting on MnDOT, both political pressures from, you know, state elected officials, local elected officials, the public. What can we do to help to help improve this program planning and delivery process outside of cash financing?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, this
in
is
30 seconds or less.
Something that we did discuss.
Mr. Nobles.
We did discuss with officials, with the commissioner, the assistant to the commissioner, all the division directors, particularly those related, involved in planning and finance. I would suggest that you have your staff and possibly you yourself may want to read some of the answers that they gave. We covered some of that ground with them. We didn't necessarily bring all of that into the report, but we think there really is a need for improving the communication and the flow of information between MnDOT and the legislature. And we very pointedly asked for recommendations from MnDOT along those lines. They do have, as I think you well know, a very systematic process of planning. They're a very data-rich organization. They have a lot of people over there that work on these very things. And again, I can only reiterate that they were very open with us from top to bottom in talking about all of the issues that we've discussed here so far and critiquing themselves, for example, in overcommitting and not doing as good a job in maybe sharing some of their information, although I think they would also suggest that they're much more open to sharing some of their information with you than maybe is the perception. So I don't know if that helps you, but at least I see a great potential in many ways for, in a way, for us to get out of the way and for you and the legislature to open up a dialogue with the department on many of the issues we are talking about here today, because a lot of what is in this report, again, is the story that we were told by MnDOT. Now, we don't just accept what we're told, but a lot of this data comes from MnDOT, a lot of the insights. And again, there are transcripts where they very openly critique themselves and talk about a desire to share more information with you, to have a more collegial, cooperative, and collaborative planning process so that they don't get themselves in this box of overcommitment or in a lot of the other issues like possibly overuse of debt financing. Mm-hmm. So I think the potential and possibility for improvement is really there, Senator.
Thank you,
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nobles. Along that lines, you know, we've always had kind of the unwritten rule in regards to GO bonds, and we try to maintain a 5% solution with that. According to your report, you point at the advance in federal construction dollars and the debt service that were that was acquired through that 03 bonding bill as being part of the reason why we're kind of in this mess with our maintenance fund right now. You know, in your discussions, did anyone happen to mention about maybe putting a cap on what we allow to be accumulated for debt service?
Ms. Janon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, we didn't specifically talk about what the cap should be, but I think the discussion that we had earlier about financial management policies is exactly about having an explicit discussion about the overall amount of debt that the state wants to take on through the Trunk Highway bond process and how that should be managed over time. So those are precisely the questions that we think need to be addressed explicitly.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Noble. And Senator Murphy, you may have been out of the room when I addressed this question earlier.
I was.
And what I said was what we were looking for is what you can find if you go to the Department of Finance's website and look at debt management. And you will see there a very explicit formal policy of guidance of how much debt the state should take on, measured in various ways, not necessarily to absolutely forever in every situation lock the state in, but so that we don't lurch from situation to situation, that we have some sense of guidance of where we are and where we're going in the use of debt.
Okay. All right. Mr. Senator Chairman, I've got just a couple more questions here. During your discussions, you know, and this goes to the collection of data and setting goals and procedures so that we can measure what our results are. Did you happen to look into any of the parameters by which some of these things are measured, like, you know, snow plowing, for example? You know, because there's always been this bare pavement index. There's always been a rideability index, and that's how we kind of that's how MnDOT builds the maps that show which ones, which state roads are in good shape, which ones need a little bit of work, and which ones are in poor shape. As you were going through, did you happen to find anything that that changed?
Mr. Nunn.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, we didn't look specifically at a lot of different measures. And again, we focused on some of the most important measures that MnDOT has for bridge condition and pavement condition. Mm-hmm. We didn't delve into looking into the national literature or to other states to try to find some comparative data on that. In the time that we had, we pretty much went with the priorities that MnDOT had set, and we wanted to look at their performance based on the measures that they've established and the targets that they established. So,
Mr. Chairman, let me see if I can ask this a different way. Ms. Genod,
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Snow plowing, for example, we used to rate the bare pavement index when the pavement was bare shoulder to shoulder, and then we went to fog line to fog line. And I think that there's been a couple other measurements that have been changed over the years, and those were the indicators that I was asking about.
So have the thresholds, have the standards been changed? Have they been decreased?
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, the only one that I know that changed, we didn't do anything on snow plowing, but the one changed with a bridge condition threshold. The measure for the percentage of bridge deck area in good condition measured on used to be 65%, and it was reduced to 55%. According to MnDOT, there were two major reasons behind that. One is that compared to the national standards or numbers, Minnesota far exceeded the net percentage of bridges in good condition compared nationally. So we were about 65%. National numbers were at about 45%. And so the threshold was reduced to bring us more into realistic national, I guess, the numbers on that. The second reason is that to meet a 65% threshold, the department calculated that, in essence, it would have to replace bridges that were considered to be in fair condition. And that would mean they would be replacing bridges before their useful life had reached, or before the bridge had reached the end of its useful life, which isn't a very good thing to do from an asset management perspective. You don't want to replace a bridge before it needs to be replaced. Mm-hmm. And so there were those two things. It was, where do we stand compared to national numbers for the percentage of bridges in good condition? And also, are we going to have a standard where we're replacing bridges when they reach the end of their natural life and not before? So those, I did not go in and do any in-depth analysis as to whether those, you know, redo the math in terms of the replacement issue there, but mm-hmm. That's the rationale.
All right. Well, thank you.
Senator Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, that's both understandable and troubling. I, you know, we have some of the better bridges in the United States, and I don't know why we would want to dumb our bridges down to the rest of the United States, but I think that maybe that's a discussion that I can have with Mr. Dorgan and find out, you know, how we can better manage that. Ms. Janot, did you guys happen to look at, you know, we were talking about the debt. There's been money borrowed from local jurisdictions, and I was wondering if we had looked into that at all.
Ms. Janot.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, several people raised that issue with us, and in fact we got a letter from the Association of Minnesota Counties asking us to include that issue in our scope. But given our resources and time frames, no, we did not.
Okay.
Though certainly several, you know, constituencies raised it as an important issue. We just simply couldn't get to it.
But I would just add, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Nobles,
Senator Murphy, that that topic is on our list of for consideration in our next round of evaluation. So we rolled it over onto the list.
All right. And, Mr. Chairman, just for the committee's sake, and Mr. Nobles, I will be putting in the number one request again as the computer system at MnDOT to try to figure out, you know, what exactly is going on there.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Senator Murphy, that, too, is on the list.
Right. And
deadline is today, members, for issues that you want the auditor to look at next year.
And Mr. Nobles, maybe, and I apologize for not getting here on time. I thought we were doing this at 2 o'clock, and it's nothing against my staff or anything. I just completely blew that. But
we muddled through without you for a while.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Nobles, maybe once again so that I can hear it clearly, because we've had this discussion in private, but can you give us kind of what your best assessment is of the use of bonding at the with no way to pay the debt service? I mean, can you give us, for the record, can you tell us what was in your report in regards to bonding without having a clear way of paying the debt service?
Well, Mr.
Nobles.
Senator Murphy, it creates a problem.
Okay, that's Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nobles, that's what I was looking for. Thank you.
And we do cover that in the report. Mr. Nod talked about it a little while ago. And, you know, the problem that we encountered had many elements. I think sometimes people refer to these situations as the perfect storm. I don't know why it's given a positive label, because there's nothing perfect about it. It's pretty ugly. But not only the problem of not having enough money, but cost overruns, escalations of inflation. You know, there were many problems, and they got themselves into a pretty tight box. And again, they will tell you that too, and they don't want to get in it again.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nobles, I think it's the legislature's responsibility to help MnDOT stay out of that predicament again. I think that's what we were trying to accomplish yesterday. My last comment is...
Mr. Chairman, can I just clarify? I mean, they did pay the debt service. It's not, but their implications is what I think you mean.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it's
yes.
The debt service is there is a stream of money that will pay the debt service.
Mm-hmm.
So to suggest that it isn't going to be paid or they didn't have a mechanism of paying it, it is not completely accurate. It's just you can't spend the dollar twice. And so there are clear implications for the debt service being used. But there were other problems as well. It wasn't the debt alone that got them in the box.
Mm-hmm. I realize that, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nobles. It was a combination of several factors. You know, you advance federal construction dollars, and then when the federal government drops the ball on you for, I think, like 18 months, Is that what it was, Mr. Gray, about 18 months? That creates a $400 million hole. And then, you know, then you have to start paying the debt service back, and pretty soon your maintenance fund gets, you know, there's little cobwebs in the corner there. There's not much left. You know, and we really do appreciate this report. Like I said, Mr. Nobles, this is timely. I believe it's very accurate. It gives us a little bit to think about, and I would hope that here in the future, in the very near future, we can start putting things in play so that we don't run into some of these problems again. And we hate, you know, we hate seeing MnDOT being in the situation that they're in. And the other thing is, if there's something that we can do to help out, like getting some of the pressure taken off of projects being put on the schedule, projects being moved around on schedules, and maybe just overall lowering the expectations of the public to meet what the financing is available, you know, I think that's a responsibility of everybody here. I know, you know, we've had so many bills thrown in, members, on people's road projects, bridges, intersections. If I added it all up, I don't think MnDOT's got enough money in their budget for 5 years to pay for it all, let alone doing any maintenance on the road. So I think that we have we've kind of caught a hold of the tail of this animal that's running down the highway, and we're in for a rough ride.
I would add to the list of factors adding up to the perfect storm, you know, the life cycle on a lot of our facilities are coming to a conclusion, because so much was built in roughly the same span of time, you know, X number of years ago. Increasing population creates increasing pressure, increasing truck traffic, increasing truck weights, et cetera. It all kind of adds up to a wicked brew. You finished, Senator Murray?
Yes, Mr. Right. Chairman.
Representative Menor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Gannat and Mr. Nobles here. I'm wondering, I was at two presentations in the last month specific to county issues and where they're in the metro area and what we were looking at for long-term maintenance, and there were three scenarios that were presented. But all three scenarios had the assumption of a 5-cent gas tax increase on the federal level to occur within the next couple of years. And what I'm wondering about is how fragile at this point is the MnDOT fiscal outlook if, in fact, they're relying. My understanding from the analysis that we heard was that there was an assumption of a 5-cent federal-level gas tax increase to help with the federal aid portion here for their funding. Was there any look into that to see if, in fact, if that should not occur, what kind of resources would be required here on the state level?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Representative Medore, the folks from MnDOT are here, they're finance people. I think we will leave it to them to answer that question, the degree to which they have factored that in, if you don't mind.
So, and Representative Medore, we will pull MnDOT to the table after the auditor is.
Mr. Chair, actually, if that's not appropriate for today's conversation, but I will bring in that documentation, and perhaps we would want to have another discussion about that and bring the staff to the table.
Well, we can ask the question in a few minutes. So just hold the question for now, and we'll have the MnDOT folks respond. Okay. So, Senator Saltzman.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at page 60s and 61, and I know that this last August there was a lot of focus on our bridge inspectors, and they took a lot of heat, and in looking at this report, it appears that they are doing their job. And the issue is that we are taking these reports and essentially many times putting them into a file cabinet and not doing enough triage on them and getting the job done. So I think that that's something that's important for the public to see, that it's not our bridge inspectors are not doing their job. But again, we go back to the discussion that we've just had, that if we don't have the resources in order to implement you know, the problems that they see. And this is where I think it's been disturbing to the public to see pictures in a 2000 report of a bridge and a 2001, a 2003, and why wasn't it fixed? And that, I think, is something that's very important. But what I want to go to also is on page 18, that you talk about the fact that over, you know, the last few years there's been less funding for operations, research, and support. And again, in August, there was a number of articles that came out that talked about what kind of techniques are used in evaluating bridges. And there was some, you know, studies that were done in, I believe, around 2002 that talked about visual inspections are not really picking up some of these deficiencies. So when we met with you earlier, I know you asked us for some input, and I don't know that this could be the scope of this, but to look at what other techniques are out there that we could be using. And we hear a lot about ultrasound. We hear, I mean, there's many different things. I'm not going to try to be an expert here today and name all of them. But was there any, did you, and I skimmed through this, I didn't see that maybe there was an opportunity to do that, to sort of look at what are some things, because I think that this committee, as we move forward, may want to look at, again, if this is looking ahead, how can we prevent these kind of events from ever happening again, is looking at what are other things that we could be doing. Because visual inspections, I see here that all of our inspectors are up to speed. But again, I think the question is, what else is out there?
Two questions. Chairman, Mr. Nobles.
And Senator Saltzman. We talked to people at MnDOT about that, particularly people specifically involved in bridge inspection. What new technologies would you like to have? And so, again, we'd certainly make available to you those transcripts because I think they do include some information that might provide an opportunity for follow-up. Some of the items that may be mentioned may not, again, immediately have a definition to you or me, and so we may need to pull in some engineering expertise to follow up. I know one of the bridge inspectors that we talked to mentioned a finite element analysis that he would like to be able to use. So there is stuff out there that these people know about and would possibly like to use. Again, Dan Dorgan, the chief bridge engineer, is here. We talked to him about some of those new and emerging technologies that they would like to be able to utilize. We actually focused a lot, though, just to make sure that they had the resources that are available and needed today. And sometimes we forget that sometimes they just need a ladder, or they need to be able to get in a boat, or they need a lot of things to inspect a bridge. And so repeatedly we did ask them, do you get the equipment that you need with the technology that we're utilizing today? And again, we'll certainly make some of those all of those transcripts available to you to review, and they might provide some leads and opportunities for you to follow up on that issue.
Thank you.
And Senator Salzman, were you wanting a response to your first inquiry about the ability to follow up on the bridge inspections and implement
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I didn't necessarily do that, and Ms. Janai can certainly, because we did, I sort of thought Senator was simply making a statement, but if you want us to follow up on that, we can.
Well, perhaps was I correct in my statement of saying that we are – what I see from this report is that there needs to be, I think on page 60, to ensure that the appropriate maintenance has been performed and documented, and then on page 61 that the bridge queues, that there are insufficient workers to complete the amount of maintenance work needed. And we have seen pictures of bridges, and I won't name them, but we have seen bridges where over a number of years, you just want to say, why didn't you fix that? And not to say that that in and of itself was dangerous, but it seems like it would be a simple thing to do. So I think there is documentation of where inspectors have done their work. Why were some of these things not addressed? And that's what I think is alarming to the public, and that's not the bridge inspector's responsibility. They've done their work. It's the next phase of following up on really addressing, correcting those deficiencies.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, you've picked up on the two more important issues that we think need to be addressed, and they are the documentation of that decision-making so that if, for example, maintenance has been deferred It was discussed by the engineers or the maintenance staff, and they decided that indeed something could wait to document that so that we all can understand what the decision-making process was. The second issue is an issue of resources, and in the time that we had for this evaluation, we didn't get in there and dig through and do a lot of analysis describing what might the resource investment need, what is the right size in terms of bridge crew maintenance. But we heard enough from the district maintenance people to say, we think this issue needs to be addressed. It needs to be dealt with analytically and explicitly. So that's why we made the recommendation, even though we don't have numbers to wrap around that.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions on two different areas. The first area is the bond accelerated program, and the second area is more specific to the 35W bridge. But with regard to the bond accelerated program, one of the things that occurred to me when I looked at your chart that showed the proportion that was spent on preservation and the proportion that was spent on expansion, and I believe you did a side-by-side with roads and with bridges, it seemed to me that chart was upside down of what it should be if preservation is really our first priority. And I have in mind your second major finding, that even though we have a preservation first policy, we're spending quite a bit on expansion. And so my question about the bond accelerated program is, if you know, do you know if any of those projects were bridge replacements, safety, or preservation projects, or was the bond accelerated program just focused on expansion? And does that account for some of those large red parts of the bar graphs?
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Janot.
Representative Hortman, there's a list of the projects on page 76 of those that were included in that initiative. The bond accelerated program, first, it grew the size of the pie. So when you look at the proportions between expansion and preservation, part of what you're seeing here is a larger pie. And some of that, the bond accelerated program was expansion, so it was bringing expansion dollars to the pie. And the relative proportion here between preservation and expansion, those percentages per se aren't the problem if you're spending enough on preservation. Growing your pie and being able to do more expansion is okay if that's the policy that you're trying to achieve. The issue that happened in 2004, 2005 was that the spending on preservation wasn't where MnDOT wanted it to be, and they wanted to be able to redirect resources. That's part of your question. The second was specific to what was in the mix of that bond accelerated program. I do believe there were safety initiatives in here. There's some preservation, some pure expansion. I think the folks here from MnDOT would be able to speak more specifically about the mix that was here. I do know that these were projects that were on high priority lists for the districts who put forward those that they thought could be advanced or were good candidates for advancing. That's really all I know about them, though.
And Mr. Nod, for purposes of this discussion, expansion is additional capacity?
Correct.
A new lane or a new bridge? Or
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Mr. Chair, just
Representative Hortman.
To follow up on that, I would disagree some with your statement that, you know, all things being equal, having a big expansion is not a problem as long as you have enough money for preservation, because the expansion, to me, looks like it operates just like debt financing, because the bigger the system is, the more we have to preserve in the long run. So if we do spend a lot on expansion, we are committing ourselves in the future that we have to have that much bigger of a preservation budget. And so if we're not setting that aside, we might be creating the same kind of problem that the debt financing. But I do appreciate the response. With regard to the 35W bridge in particular, one issue that concerns me is how district engineers request funding for very large projects. My understanding is that there's a long-standing system within MnDOT of how they allocate trunk highway money amongst districts. And if, for example, the Metro District Engineer wanted very badly to replace the 35W bridge and were to come in and request a $300 million chunk out of the trunk highway fund, that would eat up that district engineer's budget for the next year or two or three, and so that rarely happens. And I guess my question is, how is it that Metro or that district engineers request funding for very large projects, and do you think that the way that they request funding kind of excludes them from asking for these sort of very large projects. And you mentioned the Statewide Bridge Preservation Fund. This is the first I've heard of it, so I'm interested in that too.
Ms. Janot.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, you've hit on two issues that MnDOT itself realized were causing problems, particularly for funding of these big projects, bridges and some major interchange type projects as well. So they did two things beginning in about 2005. One was that they established these two central funds to help fund, outside of their normal process, big projects. There's an interregional corridor fund, and then there's this statewide bridge preservation fund, again, where half the money would come from the district budget rather than all of it, and then the other half would come, for bridges at least, from this central fund. So that is to help address the issue that there are some projects that are simply too large to handle through the normal allocation that happens to district construction budgets. They also did something else that I haven't mentioned yet today, and that is that they've changed the formula used to allocate money out to those districts. It used to be based basically on the size, allocated proportionally. But they have initiated a new system that takes performance and need. Basically, it's a need-based allocation now, beginning in 2009, so that those districts that have greater preservation need will receive a larger share of the flow of state and federal money.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you. A final follow-up on that with regard to the 35W bridge in particular. Were there any, was there any information that you saw that people were trying to figure out a way to get funding to do a replacement on that bridge sooner than when it was programmed?
Ms. Janot.
Mr. Chair, I'm thinking. No, I don't think so. The plans, the understanding that we had was that the 35W was out there further in the time horizon than some of the other bridges. They were contemplating whether the bridge should be redecked versus replaced and what the timing of that should be. But that's really all I know. I think MnDOT would have a better sense of where it was in that long-range planning.
Mr. Chairman, the only other factor, which I think you're all aware of, it's covered again in our interview with Mr. Dorgan, and that was the contract that they had with the engineering firm URS with 35W to see what additional work might need to be done. And that's why we covered the issue of the replating recommendation. So that factors in, I think, to the consideration that that bridge was being given both by the Metro District and the Central Office. So I think they were looking at it, had been over a number of years, and considering a variety of options and projecting the longer-term need for replacement.
Mr. Chair, just to conclude.
Representative Hartman.
I just wonder if the structure is set up such that if somebody within MnDOT, whether it's 35W or Hastings, knows that they need to replace a very large bridge, it's the last thing they're ever going to ask for money for. The same way that when you have a very large problem in your personal finances, it is the last issue you address because it seems too large, seems too insurmountable. And it just seems to me that when we're looking at bridges that are all in this time frame of replacing them in 2020 or 2030, that somebody somewhere has got to be having a conversation, whether by email or within the office, about is this realistic and how do we accelerate these replacements?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hartman, I think they have very systematic discussions about where bridges fall in terms of the replacement cycle. I didn't want to make it sound like they don't. I think each of the bridges, each of the districts has a sense of which bridges and in which order should be in the queue for rehabilitation or replacement or major contract work in terms of maintenance and preservation. And each of the districts knows where they are with their inventory. And the bridge office centrally deals with those same issues as well. You know, their regional bridge engineers and Dan Dorgan and the rest of the team there. And I know they have a systematic process. They have a grid for assessing where a bridge should fall based on its condition and its age and some other factors. It's all in a spreadsheet. They know, you know, relatively where bridges should fall, and the districts reassess that when they go out and do their annual planning, or their crews come back and say, okay, we have new information on the bridges. They take that very seriously, and they're doing the mental math on that all the time.
With your indulgence, Representative Severson, I think Senator Murphy has a follow-up to this.
It's along the lines of the 35W bridge, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Janol, can you comment on the URS document in the last inspection they did? There were handwritten notes in the back that said gusset plate failure will not cause a collapse of a bridge.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I didn't analyze the URS documents as part of our, this evaluation.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I think, as you know, we addressed the issue of URS contract and its communication and interaction with MnDOT in our interview with Mr. Dorgan. That's as far as we took that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just when I saw those handwritten notes about the gusset plate, I read that about 3 days after the NTSB chair had come out with some preliminary findings about, you know, the possibility of a gusset plate failure. And
Mr. Chairman, I guess all I would say, Senator Murphy, is that, I mean, we try to be very cautious in taking a little bit of information like that.
Mm-hmm.
And not knowing the context in which that comment was made, not knowing who made that comment. So I think to draw any conclusion, one would need a lot more information.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nobles, that's what I was wanting to know, if you guys had any more information on that. But I think we'll have our investigator look at that closely.
Thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions, I guess. And to that point, I come from a military background, flew Navy fighters. We get, you know, so I did a few mishap boards. And the NTSB is highly utilized in the military because of their reputation for doing such a comprehensive investigation. And typically, we don't see any of that for at least a year. And we don't even begin to speculate on any of that stuff, because what happens is exactly what's taking place here, is that something leaks out and then you go off on a tangent in a direction that is so far askew from the final result that you've just spun in a different direction than you needed to do and wasted a lot of energy. So I only say that to say that, you know, unfortunately we want to hear the answer so quickly, but unless we get the whole picture put before us, which they are very adept at doing, I think we kind of go in a place that we should not go.
Well, Representative Stevenson, I think everyone at this table would agree, and I think there's a question mark about that now infamous press conference and what its purpose was, because it created this firestorm that seems to have been completely unnecessary.
And I guess along the other lines that we were talking about, one of the questions I had, and I've been in the Transportation Committee now, this is my sixth year on the Transportation Committee, and I know that early on we had been sort of reprimanding MnDOT for holding a, what we'll call a slush fund, or, you know, $350 to $400 million on the side here to try and balance the books, let's say. And because of that, they kind of spent down that fund. Shortly afterwards, we come up with an $800 million bonding proposal, $400 on the bond through efficiencies through MnDOT, and then the other $400 on advance leanings from the federal government, which kind of took them into a desolate land, if you will, which then we end up with MnDOT going to different contractors asking to front the money for a particular project. And I just wanted to comment on that to say sometimes we as legislators have a passion to move forward and to have these things funded, and we come up with these great innovative ideas that just seem to collapse on the weight of their own ineptness. So I guess I'm wondering, is any of those are those lessons learned in the whole financing provision that you are talking about bringing forward here that the Department of Administration has and maybe MnDOT needs to take a look at? Was that part of the lesson learned in that process?
Representative Severson, absolutely. And it is, again, a topic that we talked about with finance officials and the commissioner, who has been on both sides of the table, as you well know. And so I think lessons have been learned. And, again, that's part of what we'd like to see more as the dialogue between MnDOT and the legislature on what kinds of reserves you and the public would be comfortable with so we don't repeat that situation again. And, you know, MnDOT is so big and so important, you can almost compare it to other aspects of state finance generally. And, again, we did earlier in the fact that you need a debt management policy for MnDOT just like you have for the state. Well, I think we also need to talk about what kinds of reserves we should be holding at MnDOT just like we do at the state level.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess one of the other questions, a little bit in regard to what Representative Horton was talking about. I know there was some talk last session about the federal dollars that were coming in and going into a 2575. There was a mega project proposal that was for those large projects in the state that MnDOT would take a siphon a portion of those monies off and put it into a fund that was dedicated to mega projects, I think they were called. And I'm not sure where that had transpired or if that's being implemented now, but it would take some of the load off of MnDOT and some of the political process. And is that something that's being discussed in the financial side of it as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, they have the two central funds established. One is a corridor fund, and the other is the statewide bridge preservation fund to pull some money centrally for those very large projects. So that has been implemented. Now, what the balance is in terms of the funds that are available in those, that I'm not sure of, and MnDOT would need to answer in terms of actually financing and how much money they've been seeded with and how much they expect to add annually and from what sources.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Severson. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, and I believe probably this is a philosophical question that maybe doesn't have an answer, but you know, we talked about preservation first being the policy and being the intent. But given that that roadways don't really fail catastrophically like a bridge might fail, it seems to me the preservation first policy has to be somewhat different, of course, between the two. And what I'm wondering is it different in an adequate amount? Because I guess when I would look at preservation first, I would look at probably repairs, of course. You want to repair it, but also perhaps preventive maintenance. And preventive maintenance, it seems like maybe that's the next level of maintenance that we need to address to make sure that preservation first is reached. And one of the things I was looking at here is the, you know, the Mackinac Bridge was built in 1957, and they expect that to last another 100 years. So they're putting a lot of preservation work, but they're also putting preventive maintenance. The Golden Gate Bridge was built in 1937, and I think they're expecting that not to have to be replaced soon. The Brooklyn Bridge opened in 1883. So I'm wondering if we can look at that, and can we make any judgments? Is our preservation policy adequate for bridges?
Well,
Mr. Noble.
Mr. Chairman, I think clearly in overall, taking bridges and highways, I think the issue is that it's not being fully implemented. I think we have no reason to disagree that that ought to be the first priority, preservation and safety. What our report says, though, is that some of MnDOT's investments have not aligned with that policy. This is actually what we said 10 years ago in our 1997 report. And we focus particularly on just some of the things you've mentioned, and that is, and we do it again here, and that's the routine maintenance. You know, if an inspector goes out on a bridge and finds something that looks really serious, it'll get attention. But if you talk to the maintenance people, the inspectors, as we did 10 years ago and again, they will tell you what we need to do more of is the routine, sealing cracks, flushing bridges, doing the kinds of things that we all do for our cars and houses to try to extend their life so that we don't get to a point where we have a major problem on our hands that is going to be very, very expensive. So again, you talk to MnDOT folks, the people that wear the hard hats and the boots, they'll tell you exactly what you just said. They agree. But it is, as Representative Peterson said, comes down to money and resources. And, you know, it just doesn't necessarily go around far enough to get to some of those things that people don't see as pressing or high a priority, but over the long run can really be serious deficiencies.
All right, seeing no more questions of the auditor members.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nobles, I don't know if this is apropos or not, but I have a concern. One of the problems we have trying to determine exactly what money we should put in. We know we have a real problem now trying to fill a hole. But frankly, I look at page 77, and, you know, we see that the probability of future revenue is not appreciating, if you want to say that. It's declining. And by looking at that and the revenue sources we have, we really don't have any alternative. But as I chair a finance division in transportation. And when every year when we look what money we need, frankly, the only access we have is the governor's budget. And frankly, it appears the governor's budget hasn't realistically met what we need. So we struggle to determine what money we should put in, and we probably aren't doing a very good job of it because we can't sell the rest of our colleagues oftentimes that we need this money. And I think that's been critical. It's been difficult to some degree, and this is going to sound critical, but in my time, we used to have the department come in and be an advocate for funding. And I have to say that we don't have an advocate for funding. They will answer the questions that we need, basically, but we have no assurance that you need more money for basically maintenance or construction. We take the monies we get. Look at the governor's budget. In my opinion, apparently the governor's budget hasn't been meeting what we need for requirements. So we try to come in, and we'd be forced to come in with what everybody calls a big bill because we're trying to pick up what we had in the past. Is there something that we should be doing, or is there something the department should maybe be looking at, saying they need more money in maintenance or operations? Are we holding fixed amounts? Some of the comments we've had appears that maybe we're not addressing long-term needs as we should.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, you know, again, this was an issue that we discussed quite extensively, particularly with the finance and planning staff at MnDOT. And again, we pressed on the issue of the communication that exists between the legislature and MnDOT. And we asked many of these people, whom you know, if there's any restriction on their ability to come and tell you what the need is. All I can tell you sitting here today is that they told me no, that if you ask them to come to your office and tell you from their professional point of view what the need is, what the numbers say the need is, they will tell you. And that's how we got to this report. And I assume that's how we got to the commissioner saying she agrees, because that's what the numbers show. So I don't know quite where the breakdown occurs, but clearly, Representative Leader, it does somewhere, because you said what you just said and feel it, I think, very strongly and sincerely, that you want something more from the department to back up the solution to the problem that is portrayed here. And that might be a good segue for us to leave now.
Great.
Have you talk to the commissioner.
Sounds like the legislature's from Mars, the department's from Venus. Representative Hartman, members, we do have to, you know, keep an eye on the clock to call attention to that.
Just in brief response to that is we respond to budget requests. We start with the governor's budget as a starting point, and then we work from there. And so if the level of need is not reflected in the governor's budget request, then it's hard for us to respond to that. I appreciate very much their professional staff within MnDOT that will come to our offices and tell us what the need is. But if it's not reflected in the governor's request, then it doesn't trigger the kind of action here at the legislature to fulfill it.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles, Ms. Janod. The department is here. I know we have at least one question for the department. I'm sure the department would like an opportunity to respond as well. So whomever from the department would like to come forward. So members, our goal isn't to spend a lot of time quizzing the department today. I think we've had a good conversation, a good presentation of the report, and we have the department's response in writing in the report. You can read that. All right. Welcome, Mr. Dorgan.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I'm Dan Dorgan, the bridge engineer for MnDOT, and I am sorry I did not catch the question that I'm coming up to respond to.
We'll start with Representative Mador, and we might need to pull our financial people forward.
Yeah, and yeah. I think maybe that's what we should do, because this relates to a presentation that I saw to the Carver County Board, and it was a joint study from MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council to talk about low-cost, high-benefit projects. And in particular, it talks about three different options that are available to the department to solve our congestion. This is specific to the metropolitan area as well. So then maybe it's not the – maybe somebody else needs to answer this. But the three scenarios that we're putting up, that one of them was called the fiscally constrained plan. The second was alternatives to congested with limited additional resources. And the third was alternatives to congestion enhanced additional resources. And as we went through, we realized that we were probably working with the fiscally constrained plan. And of that, we talked about the cost that we're eating up, the cost of inflation, which I believe, if my numbers are correct, 37% over the last 3 to 4 years. The last year alone, 17.1% increase in construction costs. And then the last part of this is I said, well, as you know, we're moving to trying to pass a new budget. And if we do not get any additional revenue than what the governor has suggested that we get, well, how does any of these plans fit in? And the representative from MnDOT said that the federal revenues are eaten up in whole by 2012, that the expectation of the department is that a 5-cent federal gas tax will be passed to bring new additional monies into the fund. That's what I was told. I'm wondering if, in fact, anybody would like to comment on that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think I am the wrong person.
I would think so.
So if the department is prepared to respond today, that would be great. Otherwise,
I'm fine if somebody would like to get back in writing with that as well.
Okay. That would be an option.
Because of time.
Oh, Mr. Dorgan, I do know that Senator Murphy is going to have a question or two for you. So someone will follow up with Representative Mador, and that will also be shared with the rest of us in some manner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have Senator Murphy and then Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Dorgan, thanks for being here today. Mr. Dorgan, I'm sure that someplace along the line someone's going to ask you about those handwritten notes on that URS document that I'd spoken about earlier, so maybe you can take a look into that and see kind of where it's at. What I would like to know as committee members, what can we do to help you improve the process by which you guys get your work done? I know that you need more resources, you need more money, but outside of that, is there anything, any legislation that needs to happen to help direct, to help give you a better direction? Make things simpler for you, hopefully.
Mr. Dorn.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and Senator Murphy, I think regarding legislation, I'll have to apologize. I don't have anything in mind today. I think as a department, we'd have to go back and look at that to see. And I presume you're asking the question from a standpoint of, is there impediments to us getting projects out and built on the road that we need some relief from whatever those impediments might be?
Right.
I think we'd have to take that back as a department and study that, because some of the issues, frankly, that you know do slow us down were put in place for valid reasons. So I think there is some give and take on a lot of those issues to understand whether those restraints are appropriate and whether we need to continue or perhaps a different route is needed. So I apologize. I don't have an answer for you today. I think we'd have to take that question back and study it as a department.
That's fair enough, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dorgan, and this is in relation to some of the questions about the technology of, the new wave of technology that's coming for bridges and all. If your office could, sometime between now and the end of the session, maybe produce a document for us kind of outlining where your division is and where they see themselves in regards to using some of these technological pieces on bridges.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, we can certainly do that. And I would share with you today that we are working, and we have worked for years with the University of Minnesota, in fact, and we're embarking on another project with them to look into some of the monitoring equipment available and for them to do some evaluations along with we're looking at what federal, or if there's a federal highway program, rather, that's also running along that same track. So, but we will put that information together and prepare it for the committee.
Mm-hmm. And, Mr. Senator Chairman, Murphy. Last question. Mr. Dorgan, we worked with your office to put together Representative Leader's proposal on, establishing several tiers of bridges and trying to help you make that work. With that additional $600 million potential, I mean, is that going to be enough? If you leverage that with federal money, is $600 million going to be enough to address the 14 or 16 structurally deficient bridges that we have?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, I think it would depend what list we're speaking of. And as you're aware, bridges such as Hastings can easily consume. I can't recall the latest estimate, but it's probably in the 150 range. Can easily consume a good share of that all in one shot. So it's kind of dependent on what the list of the 13 bridges are that were in mind. But I guess long term, certainly $300 million. I think it's $300 million a year for 2 years. Mm-hmm. We'd welcome the challenge of delivering that. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, there will be needs in future years. So it'd be a welcome addition. It certainly doesn't solve all the problems in their perpetuity.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dorgan, kind of what I'm getting at is that if that bill would become a reality, you guys are on the express bus now, and
certainly.
And several of us have made promises that those bridges in Tier 1, and I don't believe that there's 14 or 16 in that, and Cheerleader knows those bridges a lot better than I do, but we would have expectations, and I think that's reasonable. I mean, if the public is going to spend $600 million, I think that they would like to see some measurable results. So whatever we need to do to help you out, you just let us know, please.
Senator Murphy, I think it's 13 bridges.
13.
13.
Okay.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you.
I'll make it quick. I've got a comment and then a question, and the comment I make is that I appreciate this report because, in my mind, the MnDOT that I know is also the proud institution of MnDOT that I have known, and I appreciate that very much. Now, here's my assignment. I look at the page 26, which is the pavement condition by district. And I want, and it tells me that the three districts of Duluth, Metro, and Rochester only constitute 36% of the roads, but they constitute 75% of the bridges and 66% of the vehicles, and yet they are not anywhere close to the goals of the Road Quality Index. That being the case, then I go back to the chart on page 77, which is the cumulative change in construction pricing, which Mr. Leader was talking about. Could you come back and just take those three districts and say that if you're going to get them up to some kind of a quality standard, according to your Road Quality Index and your preservation, given the change in price indexing as it escalates over the next, you're going to tell us what it's going to take to bring them into order over the next 2, 5, 10 years, and you're going to lay that with the construction price index so that the committees, I would think, would have some kind of an idea of this wedge that is being created between the ability to perform and the ability to pay. And I think those two things are would be very significant if I were on the committee, which I'm not. And say, help me understand that wedge. Pricing is going this way, and you have those three major districts with 66% of the vehicle travels in this state are under your quality. Just bring them back to quality index. And Mr. Murphy, you maybe already have that information, but for some of us novices on this committee, I think it'd be a telling moment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, so the desire then is to find out what that cost would be to bring those three districts.
Yeah, what's it going to take? What's it going to take to get those three biggies into compliance, given what's going on with escalating prices?
Okay.
And do a pro forma. Just give us an idea.
Well, Representative Peterson, I think we do have. I agree with Auditor Noble's. MnDOT has
those.
Been quite explicit about that. Maybe in the context of escalating construction prices, the inflation in construction, that might be a little more pronounced than models we've seen in the past. But we have a pretty good idea that to get to MnDOT's goals, we have a huge task. And even the bill we passed yesterday doesn't get us there. Welcome to the committee.
Chairman, my name is Keith Shannon. I'm the state materials engineer for MnDOT and I'm responsible for monitoring and measuring the pavement conditions and some of the information that's in the in report. And the report does have some of that data in there, but more on a statewide basis, so maybe I can explain that a little bit. And Representative Peterson's correct. The three districts with the largest number of bridges also probably have the largest current pavement issues. But we look forward. We look forward with a model that we have so we can predict the needs over, example, the next 10 years. And in the report, what it shows is in the current transportation plan for the next 4 years, we put those projects in through 2011. And then from 2012 to 2018, we use this model to say, what will it take to get back to the pavement targets statewide?
Where do you do it?
By the year 2018. So that data is in here, and basically from 2008 to 2018, really 2012 to 2018, it's about $441 million, and that's on a statewide basis. The focus on those three districts, based on the data here, is correct, but all the districts have needs, and some districts have a need that's coming up in the next few years. So the need is really across the state, and that 441 represents the entire pavement needs for the state. Mm-hmm.
Senator Murphy. Mr. Chair, Mr. Shannon, that does not include bridges?
No, it does not.
Just pavement.
Okay. There's a separate number in the report that's added to the pavement number to come up with total needs for the next 10 years.
Okay.
And of course, that doesn't include capacity expansions, mm-hmm. which then gets us to a really big number.
Right.
All right. Yes, more elimination.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peggy Reichert. I'm the Director of Statewide Planning at MnDOT, and I did give a presentation about 2 weeks ago to the Senate Transportation Committee that tried to lay out our preliminary numbers looking at our revenue forecast for the years 2012 to 18 and our needs just for pavement and bridges, the little bridges and culverts and the big major bridges. And over that time frame, the rough numbers that we have, and we're still refining, but this is kind of to get a sense of scale, is our revenue forecast, state and federal, under current current bills, no new money, is between $635 million and $700 million. 2012, $635 up to $700 million. With inflation and kind of averaging it over that time that we're forecasting inflation, we feel that just to do the pavement and the bridges, we need to spend about $670 million a year. And that is why, and that's it's right here in the legislative auditor's report.
Give me a page, would you please?
Page 582 at the top. It kind of gives these, this is kind of ballpark numbers. We're still refining a lot of this because we do every year we update our 4-year capital plan and every year we update our 10-year capital plan. And we, every year we relook at our revenue forecast, we update our cost estimates so that we can take into effect these things. We have to make a lot of assumptions about inflation. We have to make a lot of assumptions about the future federal funding because we get both state and federal. And Representative Mador, to answer your question about the nickel, when we had to forecast what do we think is going to happen with federal funding, in the past we have had three big federal bills over the past 15, 20 years, and each time we've gotten more money. The last bill in 2005 gave us a lot of new money. And the reason that the federal government could do that is that there was a big surplus in the federal trust fund. And we now see that they're spending it down, and it is forecast to be in a deficit next year. We, in making our assumptions on our forecast, we have assumed that the federal government will find some way to honor the what's in their legislation, in their appropriation. There are several ways they could do it. The rough estimate of how much that gap looks like it will be is about a nickel gas tax at the federal level. However, they could also put in money from the general fund, or they could simply shift their program funds around. They have a lot of discretionary funds. They could say they're not going to do those and do the core funds. We don't know what they're going to do, but they've never not followed through. But that could happen. So we've assumed they will give us the money, but we also are doing contingency planning. So we're programming for it. If it doesn't happen, we're setting our priorities. We know what we'll have to do. We're doing a lot of contingency planning these days.
Representative Mador.
Thank you very much, then, Mr. Chair. Well, now that opens up a whole new question, because what is the deficit that we're looking at if we don't get 5 cents, they don't reprioritize, you don't get another nickel from the federal government? What is going to be the deficit on your budget then?
What is the contingent plan, Ms. Reichert?
I don't have that number off the top of my head, but we can certainly get that for you.
Thank you.
I think that would be very helpful.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I saw another hand over here. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The numbers seem kind of low to me, and you're speaking only of preservation. Now, I know in my office in the last week or so in the metro area, and I don't know if you include preservation, a lot of the interchanges and all that, that's not considering any of that at all, apparently.
Right.
That's just overlays basically on existing road widths and nothing changing. So technically, we could assume that's going to be more than double if you're really going to do it. If we're going to hold preservation to the Stone Age and just do that without any in the next 20 years, whatever you have, just what we have, I don't think that would be our intent or your intent either, would it? I would think you'd have to make some level of
yes.
Ms. Reichert,
advancement in it somewhere.
Mr. Chair, Senator Leader, we did, if you recall, last time we did our long-range plan, which we're now starting to update, in 2004, all the districts did their long-range investment plans, and we presented that to you here in early 2004. And we then, at that time, costed out. We said, how much money are we going to have in the future, and how much would it take us to take care of pavements, bridges, safety, and take care of not fix metro congestion, but slow the rate of decline, of increase, and do some things in greater Minnesota, in the major cities there. And we came to you and we said, the long-range plan to do all that in 2004 dollars was around $37 billion. We told you then our forecast was a little under $15 billion over that 2008 to 2030. And we told you that there was a funding gap in 2004 dollars of $1 billion. And I think you've been quoting that billion-dollar number, and that's 2004. And now we're going to update all that now, and we're going to see where are we in that. But we started with just what would it cost to do preservation in contrast to how much money we have, and it looks like we have just – it looks like – and this is what the legislative auditor said. It will take most – it will take all the money we have just to do our policy of preservation first. And so if you want us to do more than that, then we'll probably need some more money.
And, Mr. Chairman, are there any proposals coming forward for that other than the initiative that the legislature brought forward?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if the folks at the table can answer. They're welcome to take a stab at it. Representative Leaders, you have another? Okay.
Well, the big thing is my concern, again, to address, and I don't know how many in the metro area, you could add up $500 or $600 million right now. Apparently, they're in your offices asking for developing these interchanges, and we're not addressing any of that. And I certainly don't want them to come into my office anymore because I can't give them an answer. We're trying to do it with the bill we got, and that isn't even going to touch it. So I'm a little concerned about what's going to happen down the road.
Senator Murphy.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Chair Leader, you're exactly right. If we continue down this path for much longer, it's pretty clear with this report and what you folks have been saying that we're in pretty dire straits, let alone getting any, adding any capacity. And we all know that good transportation systems equate into a good economy. And and that's why we put things in our bill, like the interchange account, the bridge account, to try to help promote some economic development and to build some jobs. But, I really feel for the folks at the table there. I know the kind of constraints that you're under. And, hopefully if this bill is successful and becomes law, hopefully it'll help take a little bit of the staying out of coming to work every day. So,
Representative Leader. Mr.
Chair, and I'm just concerned. I just don't like to belabor this, but I can take one of those interchanges, and I understand it's over 3,000 jobs. Taxes, and it's just one interchange, and there's two others. So that would eat up practically your whole construction budget. Maybe they aren't that high priced, but I'm sure they're close to $100 million. Each one, and you can't even won't be able to address them at all because we don't have the money.
We have a $450 million interchange proposal right in the heart of Minneapolis. So, just one. Mm-hmm. Representative Medore.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just one last. Again, I'm just asking, where are the project requests? I can tell you what's happening in my community. Every one of us here can be telling you what we need in our community. Your report, the auditor says that you feel comfortable coming to us and asking us for things. Where are the requests for the projects?
Well, Representative Medore, I would suggest that the folks at the table this is a question put to the folks sitting behind them in the audience.
It's way beyond.
Perhaps that's not the purpose of today's hearing.
I understand, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
We've been clear. We were clear on the floor yesterday. We've been clear in the Transportation Committee. This is, this particular presentation has particular focuses to give us some context and backdrop for the purpose of this committee. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And, we appreciate last week, and I apologize for not being at the meeting, but we appreciate the information that you did try to bring forward, at least from my understanding. But if at any time that you want to come and either testify in front of a committee or come visit any of us, feel free. And, we have a, and I know Senator Dibble as well, we have a strict confidence policy, and if that helps.
All right. With that, members, anything further? All right. Well, thank you very much. We are adjourned.